kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, a couple of previews as well. And for that, we're starting things off as we usually do. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Just too cold for comfort and not quite sure if I want winter to end or if I'm not looking forward to the end of winter. That passage of time thing is a bitch, but cold can also kiss my ass. How about you?
It was windy this week, like obscenely windy.
Oh, that's a. I'm glad you said because it's a funny story here. So the wind that we had a couple days ago, I was at a friend's house and we were playing like this weird, like D&D-esque sort of game where everyone's telling us a communal story about characters we created, blah blah blah. And I had a character whose side story was that he was a down on his luck shopkeep who was on a quest with everyone else to slay a dragon. But I didn't trust one of the party members who was an assassin because I believed that she had something to do with the death of my wife and child. And unbeknownst to me, one of the other players at the table's side, like, you know, their NPC that they created was my wife. So I was like, okay, so I believe this person killed my wife, but apparently my wife is not dead.
Oh, God.
So I wrote this little weird narrative around it. And at the end of the story, basically, we failed at accomplishing our first goal, like humongously failed. So someone in the party had to die for that. And the way I wrote the story, I was like, so it turns out that the assassin and my wife were in cahoots to hide the fact that she was still alive. And unbeknownst to me, they plotted my demise while I was plotting on the truth. So just like that, they killed me. And I slammed my hand on the table, and as soon as I did it, all the lights went out.
Oh, God.
Like, because, you know, from the wind, like, it knocked all the power out. And I'm like, I guess now I am about to die then. Shit. How'd that happen? Like, the
smack.
Timing was perfect. It was perfect timing. I'm like, you can't beat that. You just hang it up. No one's topping that reveal.
It's like, am I God?
I have special powers. Narrative powers. Shut the whole game down. It was amazing. And I'm riding that wave for a couple days now.
Oh, my Lord. You were just full of stories, aren't you?
Every once in a while, man. I don't know. I'm like that guy, you know. I'm that guy, like the old man who's always sitting in the rocking chair on the porch and the kids will be like, tell us a story, Granddad. All right, hold your horses. Sit down. Sit down. I got a story for you.
Grandpa Pernell.
Once upon a time, your old grandpa was wiping his ass and some crazy story. It's like,
and my sciatica started acting up.
Yes! It's like, for all the weird crap that happened in my life over the years, like, there's something to be said about what I could, like, something that could have been crappy at one point, but now all of a sudden, it's a pretty cool story to tell, which almost makes it kind of cool. Like, I'm glad it happened now because I can tell the story in the future, and now it has a completely different meaning than it had when I was experiencing it. So it's just, I love stories. I love telling stories. I love hearing stories. It's just good stuff.
I feel like this episode of the show is going to be its own mini story because I've been getting sick over the course of recording everything, and I recorded everything completely backwards. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the start of the show, and it's the last thing I'm recording. And I already
so you're going to be getting better and better as it
goes. I'm going to feel amazing as the show progresses.
Welcome to the SML Podcast. Like, Thank you for listening to the SML Podcast!
I feel stuffy, I feel shitty, I have a headache, and by the end of the show, I'm gonna feel fucking awesome.
Like, you've been, like, the magic of SML flows through you today. I don't understand, I can't explain it, it's magical.
Oh, I can't explain it either. Oh, God. Anyway, we should probably get to what we are here to do, and that is, you're here to do two previews, no reviews this week.
Nice and easy breezy, no stress on my back. I can just say, do these things before your game comes out.
Exactly.
I love when that happens.
And hopefully people take your suggestions to heart, And we have awesome games coming out. You ready to start?
Let's get down to business. Vroom vroom.
Vroom vroom. Well, we're that one will be second.
Oh, well, ships can zoom vroom vroom too. Maybe they go
pew pew. Pew pew. But first game to talk about tonight, a preview of Nova Drift, developed by Chimeric, published by Pixel Jam. This one's releasing March 27th on Steam. Nova Drift distills the mechanical depth of an action RPG into classic arcade space combat. Control an endlessly evolving biomechanical ship, face legions of strange and deadly foes, and ride the wake of a dying star across the void. Purnell, what is this game about?
This game has some legit potential, and I am looking forward to the final build. I'm not sure what he's going to add to it, but I'll get into that as I discuss this preview-ness. So the idea of the game, it reminds me of that old arcade, I want to say like Asteroid, maybe Asteroids, because Asteroids was the one where you're the triangle in space, right? You're on the single screen. Mm-hmm. So in this game, it's the same idea. You're you're not necessarily a triangular ship, but you're sort of triangular, and you're on a still screen that doesn't move. And if you go to the top, bottom, left, or right, you'll come out on the other side. So it scrolls around. And the way the game works is that as you play, waves of enemies will come into the screen to try to murder you. There is a propulsion button and a gun firing button, and that's it. No other buttons. Oh, sorry. There's one other button to release drones, but I'll get to that in a minute. Mm. But you essentially are trying to kill machines and not let them kill you. But as you kill monsters, you'll get experience points, which allows you to level up your ship. And I'm not sure if this is going to be how the final works or not, but level ups come pretty quickly. And whenever that happens, you can press the button to go into a sort of a evolution screen where it's like, okay, choose what advancements you want. And they come in a variety of forms. You can get a new gun for your main ship. You can get enhancements for your ship shield system, and they come in like some pretty cool combos. It's not just something simple like shield is stronger, though that does exist also. But it's usually things like, you know, shield becomes stronger, but as a counterpoint, your gunfire rate will drop 10% or something like that. So sometimes you'll get a pretty cool bonus, but it comes at the cost of something else. So you're actually kind of like, okay, what bonus do I want? Is this worth the loss in this other category?
That's pretty cool. I like when games do that.
I agree. Like, it's not just I'm getting more powerful. It's I'm getting powerful in some ways, but I'm taking hits in others. It's a balance effect. But in addition to that, there's also different drones you can get, where you can press the button to kind of summon it around your ship. Like, it can be something akin to like an option in Gradius that'll fire bullets alongside your ship. Or it might be something that activates a secondary shield that extends further out from your ship to block incoming fire. Things like that. And lastly, it's just new weaponry entirely, where you might get a gun, like a three-way spread gun or a rail gun. I love the damn rail gun. and other things. And I even forgot to mention, there are also mods that will work on any gun. So it might be a mod that says increase the size of your projectiles by like 20% or 10%. And if you use the rail gun or the three-way shot or the bomb, that carries over across all the guns. So you can have like a rail gun, get it enhanced by like 20% in size, and then get grenades, have these giant grenades just dropping out and bursting.
Oh, that's cool.
It is really nice. I liked it a lot. And as you kill enemies and advance through waves, more, you know, larger varieties of enemies will start to pop up, making it much more difficult to survive in the waves. And ultimately, you'll also come across boss enemies. And I'm honestly not sure if I just suck or if it was meant to end at this point, being that it's a demo. But I got to a boss around like wave 20, and I could not figure out how to damage it. And the screen got flooded with enemies. Like, it became overwhelming to me. And it pretty much took me out. It killed me. But I genuinely had fun the entire ride through. I did not expect this game to be what it was, but it did not disappoint me. The only thing I would hope for to come down the pike in the final release, and I'm not sure if this is something that if the developer feel like it might be a momentum breaker, but I would like a button for reverse thrusters, because sometimes you want to just back up and fire, but you don't want to have to worry about trying to turn your ship around to get to that point where you want to do that.
Mm.
Even if the reverse thrusters makes you slower than if you propel forward, just something that says, hey, I don't want to do a full 360 turn to get away. I just want to actually just do reverse thrusters. Even if it's just like as an evasive maneuver, even just, I think reverse thrusters would be awesome in this game. It would, they would add more, way more than it would hurt, I think. But even if they don't add that, I was having a lot of fun with what I played of it, and I look forward to seeing what is expected of the final build, especially depending on the cost of the game, too.
Yeah, I don't have any pricing information yet. I'm sure we'll hear more about that through the month of March. I couldn't think of the word month. What the hell's wrong with me?
The moth of March.
I'm stumbling over the word month. What the hell?
You wanted to say Ides.
I told you it was one. It's one of those weeks, man. It's just.
It's okay. You just want to say Ides of March. We all did. It's that time.
So, in your opinion, is this something that people should be keeping an eye on?
Oh, heavens, yes. Especially if you're into, like, wave shooters and the like, you definitely should be keeping an eye on this. Because, quite frankly, this guy put a lot of love into it, and I honestly think it shows.
Cool. I will definitely keep an eye on that myself. And if he's listening, how about some console ports, eh?
Hey.
Is that in the blueprint, or is that in the planning stages at all? Maybe just a little.
I would be most pleased with a console port. Believe you me.
Lord knows I would love it on Xbox. So, And everyone would love it on Switch.
Speaking of which, I'm actually curious about this for you, because I know you're a huge fan of Xbox. So I wanted to ask you your thoughts on what seems to be a big news rumor, and you probably already know what I'm talking about without even me telling you.
Which one? There's been so many rumors.
Take one guess.
Game Pass on Switch.
That's the one.
Well, you should have listened to our last episode, Purnell.
Dang it! If it helps, I have trouble listening to my to Rhythm and Pixels. I'm like. It's like, what do you do with your time? I'm playing games for review, and I'm listening for tracks to play on the show. Were you looking at the show yourself? Oh no, I gotta review something.
No, I don't listen to the show either. I'm not a fan of the host.
Oh, what? I mean, come on, man. Cole's not that bad. I mean, she's a good girl. She's a good girl.
I hope she hears this.
I like Cole. She's a nice lady.
Yeah, I think the rumors are pretty interesting. I think it is only good for everyone. If I could play Xbox games on my Switch, that's pretty damn cool in my eyes.
I agree. And I've actually heard rumors that they were talking about, like, I mean, I didn't follow a ton because I'm tough with industry news, but I hear people mention rumors of them saying they were looking to get out of hardware and focus more on, like, the internet service and software in general.
I don't think that's true. They've already confirmed that they're working on new hardware, and the rumors are that they're going to show it off at E3 this year. Ooh. Again, that's just rumor. No one knows if it's true or if it's not. We'll find out eventually in a few months, but I don't think Microsoft is necessarily getting out of hardware. I think they're just expanding their reach with software.
And that's a very smart play, and doubly so if I don't think this is going to happen, but imagine they were like, look here, guys, we acknowledge your online setup is terrible.
Yeah.
So what we will do is let you utilize our online services, and all we ask in return is a cut of your membership service fees.
Yeah, that would be very smart on Nintendo's behalf, because their online service is kind of balls.
It's terrible. Like, I love my Switch to death, and I can clearly tell you that I put so little value in adding friends to the friends list, because you can't see their real names, it's only the aliases. And I've gotten so used to be able to look it up and say, this is such and such. I know that guy. Not, it's just your other name and only your other name. It gets lost in the sauce eventually. And not to mention that, aside from the fact that their communication sucks, their storefront's not very good. It just goes on. I love my Nintendo, but I can say that because I'm not a freaking, like, blind follower. Their setup is suck.
Yeah.
That's almost the only reason why I'm like, you know, I'm okay with paying $5 for the family plan, because it's terrible otherwise. They need some assistance, and I think Xbox Live, if they were allowed to make use of that infrastructure, would go light years towards making it a better experience on there.
I was watching a streamer play Mario Kart, and they invited me to, you know, add me and join us and play. And I fired up the game and I started playing, and my phone had an alert go off that's like, you can have voice chat through the Nintendo app. And I looked at my phone and I just said, fuck you.
Like, pretty much
out
right?
loud to my phone. I'm like, no, I don't want a voice chat on a fucking phone.
I agree.
Let me plug a headset into my Switch and chat with people that way.
Yep. Like, honestly, the only, when they announced that originally, the only justification I was like, okay, well, I hate it, but I'll deal, is I was like, the price is lower. I was like, well, if it's that damn cheap by comparison, they're like, hey, well, you can chat on your cell phone service that you're paying money for already. I'm like, I'll take that. But ultimately, if I could choose what I'd rather have, I'd rather have it on the damn device. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, especially, heaven forbid, I get a freaking phone call. I don't want to be like, well, I'm going to switch over to the... No. I want to just be like, okay, I'm going to talk on the phone. I'll put my headset down and talk on the phone. What's going
so
on?
So fucking stupid. So fucking... I don't even want to get into it. I could just rant about fucking Nintendo's online service and using a phone app to talk to people online. On your console.
You want to play Splatoon with your friends? Go on your cell phone and talk about it.
No, the only thing that that has accomplished is I will not chat with people on the Switch.
I agree.
I have no reason to fire up an app on my phone, find an adapter to hook a headset up to my iPhone because, you know, Apple's got to be dickheads with that.
In all honesty, if you want to chuckle, I pretty much treat it exactly like I used to do the Wii U in the Wii. Or actually, not the Wii, but the Wii U online, which is I run the Xbox also, and I chat through Xbox Live while I play my Nintendo console. That's what I've been doing ever since they announced they started doing online. I'm like, this is stupid. But we have, thankfully, at least we have this. We can do it through our Xbox. Let's just do it over there.
Yeah. So
just run two consoles. It's like, just add the damn features. I can't imagine it costs that much money to do. And if we're incorrect, this is another case of those. If this is incorrect and someone's listening and they know for a fact, please share the deets. I'd love to hear someone say, actually, Parnell, it does cost a lot of money to run online with voice chat. And that's why they dropped the price by $40 or whatever. Like, okay.
I'd rather pay $50 a year than $20 a year if it means a competent online service.
I concur with that. So with that, if for that, though, I would definitely go beyond just voice chat. That's what I want. You know, everything to be what I want it to be. I want aliases and real name access. I want a decent storefront. You know,
let me message people.
Yes! Frigging! You can't even message people on there. I can't be like, hey, I see you're online. You want to play a game? Or I'm going to send you this invite to play with me. Nope. It's that Nintendo microcosm. You can't reach out to strangers. They could want to touch you funny.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. We've been through this.
Stupid. Anyway, you have one other game to talk about. We should probably get to that.
Yes, sir. You're here to talk about Nintendo's Follies, developed and published by...
The other game that you're here to preview is called Super Toy Cars, developed and published by our friends at Eclipse Games. The only information I have on this one, it is releasing later this year. Don't have... It's scheduled for Steam because that's what you're previewing it on. As far as I know, they're planning for consoles, but there's no pricing information. There's no description yet. This is a very, very, very early alpha, like closed alpha build preview that you're like, there's features in the game that aren't even implemented yet. You're just giving us kind of a general look over of how the game controls, how it looks, how things are.
Works for me because this is definitely a case where I can say, hey, do this and maybe it'll happen because if they're that early on, they can make some twizzies.
Very much so.
So I won't mention the frame rate then because clearly that's a part of being an alpha build. So
yeah.
The game itself, though, I think it has potential. There's no like crazy Mario Kart-esque weapon systems or
yet.
That is true. Maybe they'll add some. You should at least have that as a mode, guys. Make it a toggleable thing. You can have weapons access or not.
The original Super Toy Cars does have weapons and power-ups in it. They're just not implemented yet. That's how early this build is.
Oh, good, good. Okay. That means hopefully this will be like the first one, then we'll have that. Because it would definitely go a long way to make this legit. I'm also looking forward to when they put music in it because I was missing the music. But back to the gameplay. The game this beta had offered access to three different track types. There was they called it the nursery. I considered like more like a playroom, which I guess is a nursery. There was a casino where you're like kind of driving across the casino tables. And my favorite course, there was a backyard. So it was like a backyard barbecue you were driving through. And you picked cars that were actually toy cars. A variety of them. They had different stats like speed, drift, acceleration, you know, the usual fare. And when you got onto the track, they actually controlled very nicely. I didn't have any issues where I felt like I was fighting the control of my car. There was nothing that made me go, man, they really need to fix the way this car handles because this is some bull. None of that ever happened. But I did want to say it drives like bull, but it doesn't. So I get to say it as a contrary. that's what fun is. I feel like the only things I could think of I'd wish for them to add, which may also come in the final build, aside from the earlier mentioned weapons, which you said is likely to happen anyway, is I feel like the game could use some more like alternate routes on tracks. Maybe I just missed them, but I couldn't find any. I was trying to find like more shortcutty things to say, hey, I went off the beaten path and this saved me this much time. And I do know that a lot of the racing community has mixed feelings about alternate routes and shortcuts, because a lot of games is when they implement the shortcut, high difficulties require you to use every shortcut, which pretty much makes the shortcut the new course. But I feel like with the proper balance, you can make shortcuts work in some cases and worth avoiding in other cases. So it's not necessarily like a must drive if it exists. Just another option for your track, which I always like. I like the ability to say, hey, I want to take the course differently than this guy does. You know, so like that. I just genuinely think this game has potential. I've always been a big fan of games like Micro Machines and games that, and Toy Commander on the Dreamcast. Basically games that say, hey, here's this real world environment. Now all these toys are actually not so much toys. You're controlling them like actual vehicles. But you're driving them or flying them or diving them into a actual normal living space. I love games like that. This game is doing it very well. I want more destructible environments. So I want to drive through a stack of dominoes and make it collapse, possibly even knocking on and falling into other cars. Like, well, how cool would that be if you could like drive through a stack of dominoes, make them all tip over. If the cars aren't fast enough, they'll just get crushed by the dominoes. I did like how on the nursery level, there was a section where there were scissors that were closing and opening. So you had to like be smart about if you could cut through the scissors or if you could go around the scissors. I thought that was kind of cool. And I would like to see tons of more stuff like that where you have to be cognizant of the state of the track in order to avoid things without just blindly driving ahead and looking for turns, you know? Course hazards. There it is. That's the statement I wanted.
Yeah. So it sounds like the game in its early stages is looking to be pretty decent.
I think so. I definitely think so. As you know, with me, music is definitely a big rounder for a lot of games. Like, even if the game is like, this game is mediocre, but that damn OST, man. Like, so definitely hopefully the music is going to be a real rocker too, because the game is already looking to be good, but music can just take it over the edge for me.
Oh yeah. The original game had a soundtrack performed by the Spinwires. I think they're based out of Buffalo area, if I remember correctly. Just like punk, alternative rock, good stuff. It was really enjoyable. I loved the first Super Toy Cars, so I'm excited that a sequel's coming. I'm excited that Eclipse Games is working on it, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing more on Super Toy Cars too.
And hopefully they bring those spin wires back so I can hear them.
Oh yeah, that'd be good. I love that soundtrack. But yeah, sounds like something worth keeping an eye on then.
Yes, sir. Keep those eyes peeled and that engine revved.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Oh, also, throw a plane in there. That's my far-fetched request. Unlockable planes. You just fly over the course as a race instead of driving.
Oh, God. Pie
in the sky requests.
Who knows? Maybe they'll take you up on that. You never know.
I want an end-game currency system where you can buy cars you can unlock and then have modeled and mailed to your house.
Oh, God. Now your demands are getting a little far-fetched.
I want to actually have an opportunity to win an actual car while playing the game. Tax-free. And I want Steve Harvey and his awkward ass to come deliver it to my house personally.
I'm sure they'll get right on that.
They can do it. I believe in them. They can do that.
Real though, do you have any suggestions on what else they could do with the game?
Honestly, right now it's hard to say. It's one of those cases where it's like, I like what you did, just give me more of it. Like, do the shortcuts like I was talking about before. I'm looking forward to seeing what weaponry exists in the game. Music. Keep the course variety as you have it. Make it as outlandish as you can get it. We already have a backyard. We have a nursery. We have a casino. Hell, do one where you're just driving between the freezer and the fridge. the kitchen, like a kitchen stage. There we go. You're driving through the oven. You know, you're coming out off the kitchen table through the pantry. You could have like a weird, like, you know, park level, a sewer level, just crazy stuff like that.
See, I really like your idea of driving like underneath the fridge and the freezer and stuff like that. Like, that's a good way to get a night cycle in your track. Because going underneath something dark, you could be like, maybe a mouse runs across the track or something.
Yeah, that would be legit. That's awesome. I'm glad you said that. That's a solid option for like an entry hazard or something. You know, oh, that would be good for like weapon types too, where it's like you could like say, this is just a far-fetched thing, but it gives them an example. But you could, the item would be cheese, and if you drop the cheese, it would draw mice that would just run across the track. Like it's an instant. Like, you know, hazard where everyone has to drive and avoid it, you know? That'd be pretty cool. Just stuff like that. Like, work, definitely put that to use. The fact that you're playing in these, like, funny little environments, make use of it. Heck, you could be a shortcut where you drive underneath, underneath, say, the table. But if you hit at just the right point, you'll knock a ball off the table. And it starts rolling down the track. And everyone that's behind you has to dodge the ball. But depending on how the track goes, it might even be a hazard that comes that's still there when the first place comes back around for their second lap. It's like, crap, it's got to be worth doing because now I got to dodge it too. You know, stuff like that.
Awesome. Good ideas.
I get a little weird. I get in the weeds sometimes, you know.
Pernell, it's always good to have you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
No, just keep on playing those games, right? Look forward to some awesome releases. And, oh, just general thought, by the way. Just stating it as a general statement, reviews are meant to be listened to or read with a reasoning of the fact that it's another person with a solid opinion who wants to help you make a good decision. Please acknowledge what they're actually saying and not just what they say at the very end, because you're missing some valuable information if you ignore that stuff. Just general statement. Are you like, what the hell are you talking about? Or are you like, I know what you're saying.
I know what you're saying.
I dig it, man. I dig it.
All right, moving on. We've got our good friend Tim Ekibis joining. Tim, how are you doing?
Good friend. All right.
Yeah, hey, no, I'm trying to be nice. We've got this filthy son of a bitch, Tim Ekibis, joining us.
There we go. That's what I expect.
Is that more authentic?
Yes. All right. Yeah. Hey, how's it going? Hi.
It's going good. Are you excited about Roman Reigns?
And yeah, good for him, man. Good for everybody. Feels good. Leukemia in remission. He needs to get a new submission hold called the remission. The remission. Yeah, I got fucking Batista back.
That was such a cool ending. That was such a cool ending.
It was.
Hey, Hunter, do I have your attention?
You know, it's funny because he had to drag that camera guy over there because no one follows him. He walks alone.
I appreciate more the fact that Ric Flair was how late getting out there, and then Batista showed up.
Well, I assume that he had already beaten him up before I assume that Ric Flair was beaten up in the room already.
And like, Batista just wanted that evidence there.
Yeah, Batista just beat him up, left the body in there, then was like, okay, I got to get a camera guy, and then, yeah.
He's like, I didn't think this through well enough. I should have had the camera guy here first.
Well, then he would know, and then maybe he'd say, like, hey, guy, you know, whatever. Don't question backstage WWE camera work. And that there was a camera guy filming the camera guy getting dragged across the floor.
Always.
You know, always.
Cameras everywhere.
You got to not think about it sometimes. Well, most of the time. Really, just shut your brain off when you start watching wrestling is probably the best for everyone involved.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
So, video games.
Video games.
You got one to talk about this week. That is called
this episode. We'll see. You know, I'm busting through another game right now, so I might be done by Thursday.
Ooh. I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will.
To be continued.
...
But for now, Trine 2, the complete story, developed and published by Frozen Byte, released February 18th on the Switch for $16.99. Play as three heroes, Amadeus the Wizard, Pontius the Knight, and Zoya the Thief, and join their adventure through dangers untold in a fantastical fairy tale world of tragic princesses and wicked goblins, with wondrous environments featuring physics-based puzzles using fire, water, gravity, and magic. Tim, tell us about this one.
Man, Trine. Oh, wow, they're making a fourth one. Spoiler. Yeah. Who hasn't heard of Trine at this point? Trine the first came out in 2009. Trine 2 came out in 2011. Trine 3 was a few years after that. But seriously, Trine's been around. Trine is a decade-old game. That's an old game. Wow.
My back hurts.
it does. Trine 2 came out in 2011, and we're in 2019 here with this game dropping on the Switch. And as luck would have it, I've never played a Trine before. Ever. Never played one. Yeah, somehow. I certainly am pretty sure I own all three of them on Steam, thanks to the lovely folks at Humble Bundle in varying capacities. But it was always just like, I should play Trine at some point. So, yeah, here we are. It's coming out on the Switch because everything needs to. You get the kind of the gimmick of Trine, if you're somehow unaware, is you have three characters that you swap between. If you're playing single player. This game does have multiplayer, a three-player multiplayer, so you can have all three characters on the screen at once.
If you have friends.
But normally, if you're playing by yourself, you switch between there is a knight, there is a thief, and there is a wizard, and they each have different abilities, which you use. It's mostly like a puzzle game, like a puzzly platformery puzzle game. Like, every now and then, they're like, here's some goblins, and you're like, it's time to switch to the knight. it's mainly that. It's like your wizard can create boxes or levitate items. Your thief has like a grappling hook and shoots a bow. The knight has a shield and sword for combat and for blocking projectiles and such in the environment. Most of your puzzle solving really seems to be done with the wizard and using manipulating boxes and such, but every now and then you gotta shoot stuff. You have these three characters, and something that I guess was new with Trine 2 at the time is they have a skill tree scattered throughout the levels. There's like little experience points, and you gain experience points by killing enemies as well, and you can use that to level up and unlock more powers, which is cool. It's a good progression and gives you more tools for solving puzzles or just making the game easier in some cases. Like, if you really want to trivialize, like, a lot of the platforming block puzzle stuff, you just make it so the wizard can conjure, like, three or four items at a time, and you build things, basically. That's a way to make the game quite easy. The characters are different. That progression is cool. Like, the abilities are neat. You get, like one of them is ice arrows. So, but the thing is, not just with... My word, I can't speak. Not only do ice arrows, you know, have effects on enemies, but when you shoot them in water, they create platforms. There's like a stealth upgrade for the thief, which you use to sneak by some larger enemies. There is, you know, a bunch of different stuff, and they each kind of have an ultimate ability at the end of their respective trees. I definitely encourage, like, if you do play in this game, explore those levels, because there is, like, little stuff hidden everywhere. And these levels look great. This is a really good-looking game, even 7 years on from the fact. I had heard back at the time that Trine, I think they were probably talking about Trine 1, that Trine 1 was a very good-looking game. Maybe they were talking about Trine 2. I don't know. I feel like it was Trine 1. Either way, this game looks good. You know, you kind of expect like a certain amount of age to hit games, but really this just has like such lavish, detailed environments. Like, it really is something to look at. Your character, like character animations, okay, those are 7 years old. but when you're holding still, it's like, man, this game looks really good. And it is a real pleasure to look at just because the environments are so detailed. And they do such a good job just expressing what is kind of in the end like a generic fantasy world with, you know, some giant creatures and goblins and just that kind of stuff. Like it does a good job with it. It's not boring to look at all. And like, you know, you could go boring with this, but I think the, and try to just let the gameplay, you know, put that in the forefront. But I think it really adds a lot to the game that like the world is so lush and that there is so much to look at, and it pushes you forward because it's very pleasing, just to experience. Some stuff that's a little less pleasing. The platforming itself is not great. Like the characters jumping just feels like a little janky, like the kind of the collision detection with some platforms. Like they feel like your character, you know, they're not going to grab onto the edge of it, and they feel like maybe like they're a little smooth at the edge. So it's like, oh, I'll be able to make this jump. And your character's like kind of edging the end of the platform, and then they like slip off the edge of it. So they're a little slippy. When you're playing around, like moving, items with the wizard or trying to, you know, set boxes on things, like things can get a little janky. Which is always a weird thing in a puzzle game that has kind of like some physics-y elements to it. When you're like, well, I think this is the solution to the puzzle. This is what I think I need to be doing, but you can't quite get the pieces to settle correctly, or they're kind of twisting one way or another, just like responding to something else in the environment. You're like, and it makes you start thinking like, maybe this isn't the right thing to do, but then like you kind of end up slopping through it anyways, and it's like, okay, I did it, so good, I guess. But it makes you question things sometimes, just kind of like, man, am I really, you know, like, is this right? Is this the best thing to do? And also when you think about like some of those progression upgrades are pretty substantial. Like when you're allowing your wizard to create multiple objects, one of the things you can get for your wizard, is the ability to create a plank, just like kind of like a straight board. And that's super useful. And I didn't get that for a while. And I'm like, and eventually like later on, I'm like, how do you even like solve some of these puzzles without this plank? And maybe it's, you know, my own lack of creativity, but it felt like, it doesn't feel like puzzles are set up that like, oh, there's a solution kind of that involves every character, you know? Because there were some instances where I would fall into a hazard or get killed by a projectile or stabbed by something, and like a character dies, let's say maybe the wizard, and I'm just like, well, crap, I can't manipulate objects, I can't create a thing, I just need to wander back to a checkpoint so that he revives and then walk back. And that kind of sucks. It doesn't happen a lot, but it's still just like, when it happens, you're just kind of like, okay, well, here I am. And there's not really an option other than to go get that character back. So it's like, well, why isn't there like maybe another, the game's 7 years old, but why isn't there maybe a different solution to this kind of gameplay problem other than me just having to backtrack, which is kind of annoying. But the game, it's not super, I did not find it to be super difficult. So even in those instances, it was like a bother, but not like a total drag. It was just kind of like, okay.
Game showing its age a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the game showing its age a bit, and that they just could have done something different. Just like weird. They're just kind of like, okay, well, now I can't do this. It's like anytime you die in like a combat situation, and you like lose your warrior, then it's just kind of like, well, shit, because the other two can't really do much. Like the thief has her bow, so you can kind of run around and like avoid enemies and shoot arrows at them, but it takes like quite a while to really take them down. And the wizard is just like, okay, you just walk into the blade and die. It's like, you really need that knight to do like a lot of damage and survive melee combat. And if he goes down, then, but you know, checkpoints are pretty frequent. So again, not too big a deal. But it's just kind of like, okay, whatever, I guess. the game has a story that exists. It didn't really grab me. I mean, like, well, because a lot of it is, and this is my own fault and kind of the circumstances under which I'm playing games a lot of the time, and that I'm playing them in a room with a child. Like, a lot of it, maybe there were subtitles I should have turned on at some point, but just, like, characters, they'll just be talking in the middle of a level, and I'd be like, oh, crap, they're talking, I'm not hearing what they're saying. Ah, well. Again, it's like, I was having a fine time, like, plowing through the game without the story to motivate me, so whatever. Again, it's fine. the complete edition, this is trying to complete edition, and in case you're wondering what that means, as the original game, it has the goblin Invasion expansion, which came out at some point thereafter. And there was a Wii U exclusive level.
Really?
Yeah, which is included in this version of the game. So yeah, that's cool.
I didn't even know it had a Wii U exclusive level on the Wii U.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. But, you know, I get these, you know, these games, and a lot of the games that come out on Switch, you know, they're complete, you know, final special deluxe editions. And I'm just like, well, what is this? What makes you so deluxe? What makes you so special, game? So, you know, I just like to look it up to kind of know exactly what's going on here. And that's kind of, that's Trine 2, man. It's a pretty cool game.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Trine series, even Trine 3, which a lot of people hated. So I'm excited to see the series hitting the Switch. For $17, what do you think of Trine 2?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think it's a bold claim to say that you should buy and check out Trine. Like, it's been well reviewed and praised, you know, for years. Like it's always been pretty well regarded. So yeah, it's a game that's definitely worth your money. And, you know, I know this, like, cuts into our review system, but really, you should try a Trine game. You should try it. If you haven't played one, you should try one. And, like, the Switch fits into our life, well, fits into my life very well, maybe this is the spot to do it. But yeah, I mean, it's well worth it. Like, the amount of content that's there, like, levels are, you know, there's probably, I think, like, something like a dozen levels in the base game, and, like, those levels are going to take you 20 minutes to get through, so it's a good amount of time, then plus the expansion stuff. So it's, you know, a good time-to-money investment. Looks good, plays decent enough on the Switch. So, yeah, check it out. Do it.
I will.
What are you waiting for? Yeah. Well, you already have. You don't need to.
Well, I'm following your orders.
Okay. I mean, maybe
I'll check it out on the Switch.
Okay, fine. I mean, I don't think, like, if you've already played all the Trine content, you need to revisit it here.
There's that Wii U exclusive level.
Really hard up to check out that Wii U exclusive level, I guess.
I'm curious. Sure. I'll admit, I am curious to see that level.
Yeah.
Tim, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, if you haven't played Trine 2, but you did play Trine, then maybe you should try Trine 2, because it's worth Trine 2.
You bastard. All right, moving on, we've got our good friend Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing fine. I'm just sitting here in my room, shivering.
Are you going to tell me it's like 70 down there and you're really cold?
Well, even if it is 70, here's the thing. The heat distribution in the house I live in right now is ridiculous. Like, in the winter, when you turn the heater on, it bakes the upstairs where our roommates live, but downstairs gets nothing. Ugh. And, you know, heat rises and cold doesn't, so that's how that goes. So all winter, doesn't matter how high you turn up the heater, it just makes the upstairs hotter and the downstairs unchanged.
Oh, that sucks.
In the summer, when you turn on the air conditioner, it's the exact same experience. So you can't turn the AC high enough to make upstairs comfortable, and then, like, it makes downstairs a fridge. So,
oh boy.
Doesn't matter what outside is doing, I'm just going to always be cold in here, unless I'm wearing a sweater or something.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm going to put on my Toe Jam and Earl hoodie here pretty soon.
That's pretty cool that you have one.
Yeah, it's because I gave an excessive amount of money to their Kickstarter. And they actually missed sending me the hoodie the first time. It took me like about 3 months later. I was like, hey, you didn't send this. And they were like, oh, sorry, here it is.
Our bad.
Yeah, it was fine. Actually, no, it was like more like a year. But
jeez.
Yeah. Well, like, at the time that I was like, well, they didn't send it, but it's summer, so...
Well, hey, the game's finally out this week.
I know. I'm so excited.
I know. I can't wait.
I technically didn't have to because I got to play the closed beta, but now it's officially going to be out and everywhere, and I'm going to get a copy. So, I'll have something probably to announce pretty soon on that front, too. So... There's a teaser. Yeah.
Is it music related?
Yeah, it's a little something I've been working on.
Oh, when can we expect to hear more on that? This is an interview now, by the way.
I'm going to say within the month.
Within the month. Sweet.
Yeah. So anyways, what were we talking about? We were going to talk about games or something today, right?
Yeah, we might as well. You have two games to talk about tonight. Let's start things off with Daggerhood, developed by Wobblyware, published by Rattalaika Games, released February 19th on PS4, 20th on Xbox One, 22nd on the Switch for $4.99. Every man should have a skill, and for Vincent S. Daggerhood, that skill was thieving. Quick with his hands, there was no loot he couldn't plunder. Life was good until that fateful day that he was finally caught, and in the name of justice to pay for his crimes, he was cast into the Forsaken Caverns. But this is not the end of Daggerhood's story, for this is just the beginning. Chris, tell us about Daggerhood.
Wait, they gave you Vincent S. Daggerhood?
Yes.
Is Vincent D. Daggerhood in the PS4 version.
Really?
In-game. Yeah.
Oh. He's got,
I guess it's Vincent DeMith. Daggerhood. I keep wanting to say Daggerfall, and I'm going to slip up at some point and say Daggerfall because I'm a Elder Scrolls freak.
That's okay. I understand.
Yeah. So Vincent D'Onofrio, Daggerhood. I almost did it. I said Daggerhood. So Daggerhood is I'm going to call it a challenge platformer. So I've given that epithet to certain games that are more about the presence of, like, you know, acrobatic, like, wall jumps and spikes and, like, instant death stuff more so than, like, you know, fighting enemies or anything like that. There are enemies, but largely what I've found is that they just have one basic, like, movement and can be taken out in one hit. But then so can Vincent. Vincent can be taken out in one hit. And so the key is to get through every stage, which are, they vary in size. Some of them are just a single room, like a single screen, essentially. Some of them are like, you know, a few stitched together screens. But usually it's a, you know, there's a path from the entrance to the exit that, you know, is doesn't involve changing screens or anything like that. So I'm going to call it like a single screen type puzzle platformer. So the different things that you get to do is that you have, of course, a double jump, and you have a wall jump, which, you know, you can combine the two and basically scale walls. That's no problem. The other sort of gimmick to the gameplay of this is that your weapon is throwing a dagger straight ahead of you. You know, think like Castlevania or something. Mm-hmm. And you have, of course, infinite daggers.
That's good.
Up in your hood. And but here's the thing about this is that Vincent's special skill is that when he throws a dagger, if you then push the button again, he will then teleport to where that dagger is.
Oh.
So it's both your weapon and your way to get across, you know, things that are too long to jump across. And let's, you know, it's very much a theme in this game that there's, like, you know, tunnels where the floor and the ceiling are made of spikes. And so you have to throw your dagger at a certain point and then, you know, teleport to that point. Otherwise, you die and start the level over. So it's very much about not only doing good jumps, like it's not a pixel perfect jumping kind of thing, you know, because again, you get your double jump and your wall jumps and stuff, although that does play into it. It's more about getting the timing and precision of your dagger throwing and teleporting down. And then, of course, there's the added challenges that, well, your guy's been thrown in jail and he's vowed to not only escape the jail, but to steal all the treasure on his way out.
Mm-hmm.
Why people keep treasure in jail, I don't know. But speaking of Elder Scrolls. But every stage has five treasures that are, of course, an extra challenge to get to in most cases. So you have that as a bonus. On top of that, you have a timer bonus. So if you can get through the stage before the timer that it puts on the screen, which interestingly enough, I never notice if they have the goal time before you start the stage. It's only after you start the stage. You're like, well, you were supposed to do it in this speed. And, you know, and you get a 1 through 3 gold coin rating. And oftentimes for, you know, like a fairly difficult stage, it'll be like the 3 coin time, goal time will be like 14 seconds. So, you know, it's very much like it's a speedrun challenge just sort of built in. And then to, adding to all that, there is a fairy in every stage that you also have to grab. I don't really remember why it's said at some point, but if you grab the fairy in the stage, that's another bonus that gets tracked. And the fairy will disappear after a certain amount of time. So not only do you have to get the fairy and make it to the end of the stage in your 14 seconds or whatever, but you've got like 3 seconds to get the fairy, you know?
Oh boy.
So you have to like plan your path accordingly. So while it is possible to simply burn through the stages, ignore all the bonuses and, you know, get through that way, you're not going to find yourself very entertained that way, because the world of the game is broken up into 5 different sections, and each section has 20 levels. And it's just one after the other. It doesn't even interrupt the music to bring up the next stage. And so, you know, you basically, you know, there's enough challenge in getting through the stage, but yeah, if you get through it without any bonuses or anything, you'll start to be like, I should probably go back and get some bonuses. Because you just know that's going to affect the ending. But that means, if my guess is correct, that this game has something like 100 levels in it. And I'm like, wow, this game costs $4.
$5.
$5, but right now it's on sale on the Switch for $4 as of this recording.
Yeah, I don't know how long that lasts, though.
And I think PS4 also had it on sale for the same price. But yeah, you know, $4 or $5. I mean, it's in that lowest echelon of indie game prices that I was surprised by the amount of content. The aesthetics of it are very much 8-bit. It looks like an 8-bit game. It plays a little fancier. It doesn't feel floaty or anything like that. It feels a little bit more like a more modern game in terms of controls. And then the music is also 8-bit. There's not a whole lot of variety in the tunes. It just kind of has that one stage tune that plays for 20 levels. And then I just assume that once I get through the 20 levels, the next one's going to be different. but you know, it's catchy stuff. So, you know, no complaints there. I always like to hear a good 8-bit soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So overall, the $5 on it, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I think this is a good buy it. It's definitely worth the time to play it. Like, again, the way the levels are laid out is, you know, creative. It's not just sometimes it's going to be just a, you know, kind of deal where it's like, well, I have to just learn this stage and learn how to do it perfectly and execute accordingly. But that's very much a positive for some people. So, and then, you know, for the most part, it's fun action. It's not super deep or anything like that, but you're definitely going to end up, you know, hitting your head against a level 20 times in order to get through it. And, you know, at a $5 entry, that's not bad. That'll, to get that series, that feeling of accomplishment. And of course, I played the PS4 version, and within, like, I want to say the first 20 minutes of playing it, I had 8 trophies.
Oh boy. So it's one of those games.
Yeah, if you're into getting trophies easily, if that's your thing, it's not my thing, but if it is your thing, then there you go.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
One other game for you to talk about is called Caterpillar Royale, developed by Sims, published by StarSign, released February 19th on the Switch for $4.99. It's the Caterpillar's merciless growth competition. Defeat everyone else and be the last caterpillar standing. Chris, what is this game?
This game, it's funny because I kind of have made it my point to play as many games featuring cats as I could. And
oh, is there a cat?
No, there's not a cat. It's Caterpillar. That was where I was going to go with that. You got ahead of me. Oh. But that's fine.
Damn me.
Nah, it's fine. This is a game where you play as caterpillars. Caterpillae, I don't know how you pluralize, I guess it's just caterpillars. Which of course are those little sluggy things that if you live anywhere but Texas, you'll see, you know, around. I almost never see them in Texas, it's weird. Huh. But yeah, so it has three different modes, all of which seem to be designed largely for multiplayer use. It's very much a multiplayer game, but it's got a sort of beat all the stages mode, where it's basically a few different types of games, and it just repeats them in different, like, sort of design levels, and once you beat the challenge, then you move on to the next one. Doesn't really seem to have any penalty for if you don't win. It just kind of moves you along. So that's why I think that it's probably just meant to be a multiplayer game. Because, yeah, you don't really lose. It just someone else wins. So, like, you get dropped into this stage, and it's like, you need to defeat 10 of the other caterpillars. So you're crawling around, and the way that you defeat another caterpillar, and this is true across all the other games, is that so if a caterpillar hits its head against something, it dies. If the caterpillar hits you, but it doesn't hit you in the head, then it dies if it hits its head on you, like on your body or something. Mm. So like the head's the weak point, the body's invincible, and you can of course travel through your own body, so it's not a problem, like Snake or something. And so basically it's kind of a thing of like, well, because you're sort of aiming a reticule in front of your caterpillar to kind of get it to move, so you're kind of like moving a little spot and the caterpillar follows it. And yeah, it's just a matter of getting the enemy caterpillars, which include computer players and just random caterpillars that show up, getting them to hit their head on you to score a hit, rather than hitting your head on them. But if you get in a head-on collision, then it just counts for both of you, but only the computer players can win. So also on the ground, there's like green things that make your caterpillar grow larger. And I like that in the options menu, they give you an option for centimeters or inches when we're dealing with literally caterpillars. Like, some people are so stickler about that like the largest possible caterpillar you can make is like 8 inches, which is incredibly large. But yeah, still, it's just funny that they're like inches or kilometers. Anyways, so you can do that, and then there are power-ups scattered throughout the levels, like a speed-up, a power-up that makes you invincible, or something that just makes you grow a larger increment than eating the green things. And you know, then you do that, and then you move on to one where the point is just to grow. So you have to be able to get to a certain size, and if you die, then you start over at the original size that you were. And then there's one that is just collect diamonds, which I don't understand why. I mean, that's just video game logic, I guess.
Caterpillar needs its bling.
Exactly. So it can be a beautiful butterfly someday, except in this game where nothing changes into a butterfly, I found out. And so, yeah, you play through and you try to get the diamonds. Diamonds reappear, so you can kind of just sit there in the same few spots and like just try to grab them as they come up, or you know, that's sometimes a little too slow for, you know, the competition might get ahead of you, so you do just keep moving, and then you just repeat all three of those again in a slightly higher difficulty. And then once you beat all six stages, then they're like, congratulations, you beat all six stages, now you can edit them. Like, basically you could set the time and you could set the goal, but it's the same stage, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it's got cool little stages. Like the last one is, the surface of the moon, which is interesting. And then there is Caterpillar Soccer, which, gets into a little bit more of an absurdity. You basically use your caterpillar to push around a soccer ball and just try to get it into a goal area. If you're playing this one player, cause you don't have any friends available to play this with, you will be playing with a computer ally as well as two computer opponents, and you will sit there and watch helplessly as your computer ally bumps the thing into your own goal. So definitely play this one with friends, at least one friend, because F that computer. Bastard. But yeah, it's just, it's literally, that's all it is. It's just soccer ball. You're in a little soccer stadium and you and your computer or human friend that try to beat the two computer players until the timer runs out. And then it just declares a winner. And then the last game is the obstacle course, which is just getting your caterpillar through a kind of maze that, you know, there's a couple of like dead ends and things like that. And, you know, like in all the games, actually, you can use a dash ability to go slightly faster, but at a cost. You get the same power ups in this one. If you hit the wall, then it just makes you like go really slow for a second and gives the computer an opportunity to get past you. Computer or other player. This one's up to two players instead of four players. And yeah, if you get to the end before the other guy, it just declares a winner and takes you back to the main screen.
Hooray!
I found that the computer in the obstacle course one never uses its dash feature, and I kind of beat it by like a lot pretty much every time. And there's no difficulty settings in this game, so I'm just like, well, okay, this is another one that I should really play with a friend who is smarter than the computer. But yeah, so that's essentially all it is. There's no real options. There's not, you know, unlockables or anything. It's just, it's a basic fun with some caterpillars that can grow to amazing sizes, such as 8 inches or whatever the equivalent of that is in centimeters.
Overall $5. What do you think?
I mean, look, this, it's a little niche, I'll admit. I would say that this is a great game for the younger set, for sure, because the controls are super easy. There's only one button, well, two buttons, besides just moving the stick to move your caterpillar along. You know, the dash button and then the use a power-up button. More or less, it's just learning how not to headbutt things. And, you know, for that reason, it's colorful. It's got, you know, a cute soundtrack. It's, you know, it looks nice. The caterpillars actually look pretty cool. You know, I'm not sure it's the most intense multiplayer experience for a room full of grown-ups. I can say actually authoritatively that Toast Time Smash Up is that. I'm laying over too much on this review, but you know, yeah, I just, as an aside, I had two different groups of people fall completely in love with Toast Time Smash Up. So
nice.
Shout outs to them. That game is great. This game is also great, but I think that it's probably aimed a little bit more for the younger set. And I think that definitely human multiplayer is necessary because the computer is a little dumb. It really only poses a challenge in the first mode, the stage clear mode. And even then, you know, cause like in the, soccer mode, it's like that game's kind of chaotic anyway. And your own computer ally is just dumb as a brick. So you're kind of on your own in that one. And I found it very hard to win that only because, you know, it just wasn't working out. I just couldn't go against three, you know, caterpillars.
Yeah.
So yeah, human players, possibly younger, but you know, there might be a little something for other people on this one. For sure, if you're looking to beef up your multiplayer experience, you could certainly do worse. So I would give this a try it, or I would give it a buy it if you're looking for more games for your kids.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Chris, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
Everybody get out there and play Toast Time Smash Up. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, man, that game was so good.
All right, and final game to talk about tonight is called 8-Bit Invaders, developed by Petroglyph, published by Sodesco, released February 26th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. 8-Bit Invaders is a fast-paced, retro, real-time strategy game for the PC. Control the military might of the Galactic Marine Corps or invade with the devastating power of the alien cranioids. No matter which side you choose, everything in 8-Bit Invaders is easy to understand for beginners and hardcore gamers alike. Collect resources, build your army, and then crush your opponent. Checking this one out, our good friend Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing?
Crushing opponents, baby.
Are you?
No, actually, I suck at this.
But it's designed for everyone.
It is. It is. And you know what? To be fair, it is a very reasonably accessible RTS. So I had covered the previously recently released game in the series on the Xbox One. The Hordes. And so this is another part of that that whole trifecta, because they had 8-bit armies before that.
Yeah.
And so Invaders is kind of the almost StarCrafty version of the same general thing, but you don't have, you know, instead of the three factions, you would have just the two. You got your Space Marines, which are Space Marines, and then you've got your Cranioids, which are like your Mars Attacks Zerg-ish. Protoss-ish choice. very much like Mars Attacks, though. You know, the big brains, big eyes, and just very comical approach to, like, a sci-fi enemy. You know, very retro-styled alien idea. But it follows a lot of the same boilerplate. So if you didn't catch the Hordes review, basically, you're looking at some very pretty voxely looking graphics. You know, it's not legitimately 8-bit, I guess you could say, but it has that good retro blocky feel. So it's like, you know, 3D pixels. Very cute, kind of kishy sort of gameplay. The music is awesome, I gotta say. I think I touched on it in Hordes, and I said the music was pretty good. I really like it more in Invaders. Really solid. Lots of cute sounds. It's not a complicated RTS, so it's accessible. Yeah, for all players, I would agree, because how can I say this? Not a lot of strategic depth to the game. You do have a tech tree, and as you play through the single player campaign, you can start building up, you know, unlocking more buildings and more units. And, you know, you build the buildings to create the units. And, you know, if you have a certain dependent building, you can upgrade your headquarters to the next one up. And these are all applicable to each of the factions as you play. So with Invaders and the two factions in it, you know, the Marines and the aliens, or Cranioids, I was just calling them aliens, sorry. you know, you've got similar but different approaches to the same tech tree. Like, you look at the manual and you'll see the tech tree is laid out similarly, but it's not one for one. It's not an arbitrary choice. some folks are arguing the Marines are a little more overpowered. I don't know if I was able to play it extensively enough to really make that judgment, but I will say that you can produce your Cranioids faster. So it's kind of like how, you know, you have the balance between the Zerg and the Marines, where you had kind of a quality quantity ratio with the Zerglings. Similar approach. You can make more of those little Cranioids, the first ones you build, faster than you can make the Marines. So you end up with more of them in about the same amount of time. But when I say there's not a lot of strategic depth, basically, it is kind of a war of who can build faster and bigger mobs. And then once you get just a shitload of enemies, you throw them at your opponent, you know. That could be arguably the basis of most RTSs at a glance. But the fact that StarCraft and StarCraft II have that sort of strategic longevity and you know, they're such a big hit with really pro-tier players, that's kind of that separation between casual versus professional, just how balanced the game is and how much strategic depth there is. You don't really have that same here. It's more of just a numbers game. And the good thing about the way that the Xbox version handles that, versus PC, instead of dragging around a reticle and selecting a horde of enemies and or units and sending them off to battle, you assign them to one of three buttons on the controller. And I found that was pretty intuitive. So when you build your units, you can use the X, Y, or the B button to create them, and they are thus assigned. So, like, you have an X squad, a Y squad, and a B squad. And so you can send them to different destinations by separating them. Like, so you hit X to select your X squad, A to send them to one part of the map, and so on. You know, so conceptually, I think it's a great workaround instead of, you know, the dragging reticle. I don't think that translates well to using a controller. That's more of a keyboard and mouse type thing with an RTS.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good workaround, because it feels pretty deft that way. But, and I complain about this in Hordes too, it's still a problem for me. When you use the left or right shoulder buttons to select whether you're building buildings or units respectively, you got to select like on this dial thing, almost like a faucet, where you use the analog stick to point to one of them. And I want to say there's like 12 selections possible, 12 points, like a clock. It's just kind of hard to get locked into that one spot with a controller. Not terribly difficult, but if you're a little frenzied, it might be hard to, you know, stay on that one and select the right unit and keep building.
So it doesn't work that well in the heat of the moment of battle.
That's my feeling on it. Yeah. It could just be that I get the jitters or the vapors or whatever it is, but
yeah, the vapors. That's what happens.
I'm getting the vapors. But yeah, that's pretty much, you know, kind of the sum of my complaints about the game. Just to cut to the quick about it, I feel like, you know, for the most part, it's a very enjoyable, humorous game. There's lots of pop culture references to it. If you read the introduction to each campaign, if you're able to, and are willing to buy into the other factions, then you can have a pretty massive choice. You can do co-op or skirmish modes and combine these, you know, you can do, you know, armies and hordes or invaders, and I forget the name of the you know, the alliance type characters in the Hordes game. I forget their name already, unfortunately, but you know, like you can do mashups that are somewhat illogical on a co-op, or you can have them fight off each other, you know, in a skirmish. But point is, since they all kind of feed into that same collection, you've got lots of fun potential there. You know, whichever faction you identify with most. And yeah, to my reckoning, none of them are really grossly overpowered one versus the other. I think it's pretty neat how they all come together in that one, not really universe, but multiverse. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool. Yeah.
I was going to say, if you had to pick one of the three to start with, which do you think would be the best, beginner, pack, I guess.
That's tough.
Stylishly, do you have a favorite?
I really feel like Invaders is my favorite so far, and that's with me only looking at, but not actually getting a chance to play our own armies. Yeah. You know, just looking at it, but I like the Invaders feel. I love the music. I feel like that's probably my favorite of the three. If you want the more Warcrafty analog, then Hordes might be more up your alley, but really I think Invaders is the best of the bunch. It's certainly the most fun.
Cool. So overall, $30 on it. What do you think of 8-bit Invaders?
It's a solid try. It I still feel like $30, a little gold plate. I think I talked about that with Hordes as well. There is a lot to do in the game, and especially if you think about it as more of a multiplayer venture than a single player one, you're going to get your money out of it. I would see if you can get a bundle with all three for less, and that I think would be a buy it.
Awesome. Oh, I got a little bit of an echo there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, what are you breaking?
I'm breaking stuff.
Got the vapors. Oh man, Royal, it's always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their reviews. Been a fun episode. Always good having friends on chatting and chitty chatting, and I'm just bullshitting because this is the first review I'm recording of the show and it's the last of the episode, so I'm just rambling.
You remember that one thing that happened like about 37 minutes ago?
Oh, it was crazy. In that one review, yeah. How the guy said that thing?
Yeah, I couldn't believe he said that or didn't say that.
Just from right now, rewind 37 minutes exactly.
Brilliant.
And see what happens.
Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant, yes, yes. But yeah, that is it for this episode. Thanks again, Royal, for coming on. Do you have any final words to wrap this episode up?
If you can't find it, grind it. Gear 1.5.